Monster Man, Episode 215, Korrid and Kraken. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at the last two monsters from the K chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, I'm going to thank some new Patreon supporters. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman. They've pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And depending on the level that you pledge your support at, you'll get access to different bonus content. At the $1 level, you'll get occasional bonus episodes like the one I just released about Nurgle, the god of plagues in the Warhammer setting. At the $2 level, you'll get a whole bonus podcast, comes out every 2 weeks. It's called Patron Deities, and it's about the Deities and Demigods book. And at the $5 level, you'll get the opportunity to choose a topic for your own special bonus episode, like the one that we have coming this week on the Cat Lord. So thank you very much to Joseph Schull, Explosion the Aquarius, and Paul Meager. It means a lot to me that you've chosen to support Monster Man. And it's incredibly exciting to me that we are closing in on 100 patrons. I've asked over on the Patreon site what people would like me to do to celebrate my 100th patron. So if you'd like to get into that conversation, or if you'd like to be that 100th patron, all you gotta do is go over to patreon.com/monsterman. All right, our first monster for today is the Korrid. Now, when I looked at the Korrid and I did a little bit of research, initially I thought that the Korrid was, you know, just a D&D monster, and they're very fond of dancing, so I assumed that the name Korrid, it's K-O-R-R-E-D, but that, you know, it was a pun on chorea, dancing, right? So same root word as choreography. But I find in some of the sources that it is a name for a type of kind of fey creature. And in fact, I've mentioned them on this show before. If you go back to episode 165, when I read out that long list of different folkloric monsters, the Korrid was among them. Now, whether these traits are attributed to the folkloric Korrid, I actually don't know. I sort of feel like they ought to be because it's hard to imagine how else these traits would be combined in the same place. So the Korrid in Dungeons & Dragons are little chaps. They got hoof legs. They're very strong, and they like to move stones around. They're alleged to be the people who built the stone druid circles, which are indeed, folklorically, stone circles are sometimes associated with the idea of dancing, that they're like giants who were dancing and they turned to stone. Fantasy creatures often turn to stone when sunlight hits them. But they have a wide variety of different supernatural powers. If you take a look at the Korrids, it says that they have a weekly holiday where they love to dance, and if a human or, you know, a person sees them dancing, they may get pulled into the dance and dance until they die. They can entangle you in their long hair and snare you. They can do a very loud laugh, which if you hear it, you would be stunned. They're super strong, and they might throw rocks at you because, you know, they move rocks around easily. And they carry various items in their pouch, but if you sprinkle holy water on them, then those items will turn to gold. What this looks like to me is like the creator of the Korrid, or the Korrid themselves, you know, rolled 5 times on the random fairy creature feature table. Because all of these are things that you can imagine, or indeed have actually heard, being attributed to fairies in a fairy tale. They can entangle you in their hair, that they are super strong, the thing about the holy water being sprinkled on the items. I mean, those all must have some kind of real folkloric origin, because it's hard to imagine a bunch of player characters defeating a Korrid and taking its pouch and just thinking to themselves, you know what, a clever fella could sprinkle the items in here with holy water and they might turn to gold. So I like them, but honestly, you know, I don't want to rehash my complaints about little short fairy creatures that love to dance and frolic in Dungeons & Dragons books. Obviously, there are numerous examples of this basic type. In a modern game, I feel like what you'd like to see is a central, like, one entry for fairy, and then a bunch of different kind of subtables to choose various features and abilities from. Because although the Korrid are fine, I'll repeat my standard criticism, which is that in terms of like when you would use them and what they're for, they're basically redundant with many of the other types of fairy creature. Although you could even turn that into a little gag. Like you can imagine a situation in which someone's like, oh yeah, you take these Bacons, and the little guy goes, "Wow, Bacon, how dare you? I'm a Korid," or whatever. But that's still kind of one joke. But they're good, actually. I'm pretty fond of them. I definitely, you know, I like all their individual features, even if putting them all together in the same monster feels a little bit like overkill. Next up, we have the Kraken. And sort of alongside the Loch Ness Monster, the Kraken is really the definitive sea monster. Well, the Loch Ness Monster is a lake monster, not a sea monster, I guess. Interestingly, I think we're all pretty familiar with the idea that a Kraken is a kind of giant octopus or giant squid. I remember seeing the 1981 film Clash of the Titans and being kind of outraged at the Kraken because the Kraken was like this big, sort of giant-y monster and not a giant octopus or squid, which I knew to be the case from books about monsters that I checked out of my school library. But in fact, Kraken, in its earliest forms, appears as kind of a generic term for sea monster. So in medieval Scandinavian and Icelandic literature, what you get is the Kraken as very much a reflection of the standard giant whale fish kind of thing. Anyway, later on you get descriptions of the Kraken which specify that it has arms, and so then it becomes a giant squid or a giant octopus. And I think that that is the form in which most of us recognize the Kraken as a monster. The idea that the Kraken is a giant octopus or squid, is a squid here in D&D, it's got 10 limbs, is pretty characteristic, and the Kraken is pretty good. It's a big sea monster, and you need some big sea monsters, and if you're going to have one, I feel like, you know, if you're only going to have one giant sea monster in your Dungeons & Dragons campaign, I feel like this is the one to have. But again, I express my usual reservation about D&D campaigns, which I think are more typically land-bound than the designers of the game thought they were going to be. I could be wrong, though. I mentioned earlier Clash of the Titans, and I think that that's a really interesting example because there the term Kraken is used as a replacement for a less commonly known sea monster. So in the story of Perseus and Andromeda, the sea monster to which Andromeda is going to be sacrificed has a name. It's called Ketos or Cetus, and it's not the Kraken, right? Kraken is not a term from Greek mythology at all. It's Scandinavian. So the idea of the Kraken must have been so well known that the filmmakers decided to use it, you know, knowing that the audience would recognize the term Kraken as a big scary sea monster. Certainly has better name recognition than Ketos, I guess. But anyway, the Kraken is good. I feel like it's one of those things that's a bit like a dragon in that if your player characters are setting out on a long ocean voyage through some maybe iceberg-filled waters or really any kind of waters, you know, they're going a long way, they're going to expect to fight some pirates and they're going to expect to have to evade a Kraken. I think those are sort of the standards, right? Like when you played Man of War, I think has a Kraken in it. And if you play Sea of Thieves, there's a Kraken. And I believe there was a Kraken or Kraken-like monster in Pirates of the Spanish Main or whichever one of its later expansions had the sea monsters in it. I think I only have the sea serpent one. It's kind of weird that such a powerful monster is a bread-and-butter monster for naval adventures, but I imagine that you're just sort of chopping off its tentacles so that the boat can sail free. So the Kraken is good. I mean, I don't feel like I have anything that original to say about it. I do like the idea that it creates a whirlpool, like it's so big that when it leaves or when it moves out of the area, there's a big rush of water to fill the space, and that creates a whirlpool that might pull an unwary long ship down. That's kind of cool. Yeah, Krakens. They're fine. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for in this episode. Our next episode is going to be a special episode about the Cat Lord, and then when we come back, we'll be starting in on the L chapter of Monster Manual 2. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.